Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
And welcome to Quick Save, our gaming focus segment of Comic Book Nation. I am your host, Logan Moore, and I am joined today by Mark DeChamps for the first time. Mark, hello.
What's up, guys? Good to be here.
And we're also joined by Matt Aguilar. Matt, hello. Welcome back.
What up,
to
everybody?
Your podcast slash gaming podcast or whatever. You're back on this one. For today's show, we are going to break down Nintendo's latest Direct. We are going to talk about the new DLC reveal for Elden Ring, Shadow of the Erdtree, which finally has a release date. I'm sure I will be the one mainly geeking out about that. And then at the end of the show, we have been playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and we are going to open up with our thoughts about that game, because that will in all likelihood maybe be the biggest game that comes out this year. Obviously not in terms of sales or anything, but it seems like that is going to be an early game of the year front runner, so we're going to share our initial thoughts on that. But first, let's start with Nintendo's latest Direct. If you are listening to the show the day this goes up, within the past day Nintendo held its first Direct of 2024. It was a partner Direct, so we did not get anything new from Nintendo themselves, which is something I actually want to talk to you guys about in a second. But the first thing I want to bring up here, and maybe this is a weird place to start, but they're bringing back Battlefront, which is like a huge, huge deal to me. And I think a lot of other people, that this is the thing I feel like I've seen the most people talking about online in the wake of this Direct, is that they've got this Star Wars Battlefront Classic Collection that's coming out next month. It's going to contain both Battlefront 1 and Battlefront 2. There's going to be 64 player online battles, which is crazy. How are you guys feeling about this? Do you have the same sort of nostalgia that I do for this? Because this game hit at the perfect time for me when I, Battlefront 2 specifically, like I was, that's maybe one of the most played games I have ever played in my entire life. So I'm very geeked about this coming back.
I'm kind of surprised how excited people are. Like, that was my big takeaway. Like, I know, and that's no offense to the games. Like, I'm a Star Wars geek, but I never really got into them. And like, I didn't sink any time into them either. But man, I was taken aback by how excited people were. And I thought that was really cool. It's funny when you see just how big something is, like when you aren't, you know, in that part of the conversation, and all of a sudden, like, you see it explode on social media. Cause I mean, that those games were kind of pre-social media era, at least not what it is now. So just seeing the reactions on like Twitter and Blue Sky and stuff like that was pretty wild.
Yeah. Matt, I was a little taken aback as well. Like, I was a little surprised that it was as big of a thing, but I totally get it. I mean, I'm around long enough to know like how big those were at the time. I dove into the original more than the sequel. It's just because like that type of game typically isn't like one I'll sink a ton of time into. Like, I'll dabble, but you know, and I'm showing my age by saying dabble. But I mess with it but I was surprised at, like, I mean, the trailer, you know, kind of got me almost like, oh man, if I had a Switch, you know, maybe I'd jump back in, just try it, you know, be fun, especially now, right? Because you got to remember, a lot of parents now have kids with Switches and with machines, and they're like, oh, look at this, play this, I loved this, you know, and you have a lot of that happening too. And it would totally be something I would hand to Ember and go like, hey, play, you know, was Mace Windu in the second one? I don't remember.
Like, where yeah, Mace, I'm pretty was. Sure he was.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So like, you're adding Chip Fisto this time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually
awesome. So
it's coming everything the stage.
Yeah. What'd you say, Mark?
It's coming everything. It's not a Switch exclusive or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Okay. So yeah.
It's coming to PlayStation, Xbox, Switch. I'm not sure if it's coming to PC. I think there are already PC versions of it, but they're obviously not these versions. Like, these versions are going to be up-resed just a bit and stuff like that and have new online functionality. Yeah, this, like I said, these games hit at the perfect time for me. Everybody that I knew growing up, I'm a bit younger than you guys too, so like everybody that I knew growing up was playing these games all the time. I would go to all of my friends' houses and they would be, you want to play Battlefront? And we, like, that was what I did. I can name 8 people off the top of my head whose houses I went to as a kid and played Battlefront. Like, so this was a huge deal. The way they dropped this direct too was one of the ones where it wasn't live and you could skim through it. And I just remember skimming through it and I saw this. I'm like, this is going to be the biggest thing from this direct. We need to cover this ASAP, because I'm telling you, this is going to blow up on socials. And it did. And that was the thing that I saw so many people talking about yesterday.
If it was a port of like Super Star Wars trilogy, I think like Matt and I would be like, that was me as a kid, you know.
I tried to play those. I had a Super Nintendo back in the day. I had all 3 of those games on my Super Nintendo, but no, it wasn't.
I do think it's interesting too, like Rich in the comments, right? Like, I just want a new Battlefront 3. Is this the whet the appetite, see how it sells, to where we get a full remake?
That's what a lot of people have been saying. I don't think so. To me, this just feels like the latest Star Wars series that, because Aspyr is doing this, that Aspyr is bringing back. And over the past 3 or 4 years, they've slowly been bringing back, you know, the KOTOR games, and then they did the pod racing games, I think. And then they did like Republic Commando. They've done like pretty much every big Star Wars game that you could think of, they have brought back at this point. These were like the glaring omissions in the Star Wars gaming catalog that have been still tied to old platforms. So I don't think this is going to lead to a Battlefront 3, especially because, I mean, here's the thing. Like, everybody keeps saying, like, make Battlefront 3, but like, games in this style just are not made anymore. Like, this is a product of that era. And like, you can't go back and just kind of capture lightning in a bottle. Like, they tried to make a new Battlefront and you saw what that looked like. And I actually liked both of EA's Battlefront games, surprisingly. So like, they're not, no one's going to come along really and be like, let's make a PS2 era multiplayer shooter. Like, that's just not really a thing. So I can't see this leading to a Battlefront 3, but I mean, I would love to be wrong. I'll say this, a quick shout out to my one friend, Turner. He is not really much of a gamer at all, but he loves Battlefront. It's his favorite thing in the world. He still owns a PS2. Just to hook up to his TV periodically and play Battlefront. Amazing. And that's all he will do. And he's tried to like get his wife into it and stuff like that. He was the first person I texted yesterday. I was like, you have to go buy like a PS4 now for like $50 on Craigslist or something and get Battlefront. You can play it on a current console. So do that. And he's like, what, really? And so he was surprised about that. But this is exciting. I'm really excited to try these out next month, especially because I never did the online stuff in the original games. I think those were Xbox Live enabled, and I never did that. So it'll be fun to play them online for the first time. All right, moving along, though. We've also got a remake of Epic Mickey, which was the thing that we were talking about here before the show. This was a big surprise because I feel like a lot of people just thought that this series was dead forever, given kind of how the reception and the sales for the second game went. There was a third game that was supposed to be made. There was a Donald Duck spinoff of Epic Mickey that was supposed to be made as well. And all that stuff shuttered about 10 years ago. But they're bringing it back now. This is an old Nintendo Wii platformer. I think this looks really good. I've never played this game. Mark, I don't think you've played this game either, but are you going to give it a shot this time around?
Yeah, I think so. It's funny because like, there was a lot of hype around this game when it first came out on Wii. Like, I remember this game being everywhere. And, you know, I was in my early 20s, you know, early college. And I'm like, oh, Mickey Mouse, you know, no way. So I was a little too cool for school for this when it came out. And, you know, now I'm a little bit older. I'm like, oh, you know, Mickey Mouse. Everybody raved about this game. And it was funny because this is another game, kind of like Battlefront. I didn't realize the following it had. I remember like 4 years ago, they started doing new merchandise for Epic Mickey, like for the anniversary. And I was like, people care enough that there's like retro merchandise coming to Hot Topic for like Epic Mickey. But people like it, and you know, it did pretty well back in the day, you know, enough to warrant a sequel. So I'm excited to actually finally get a chance to play it.
Matt, have you played this one for yourself?
Yeah, so I played the original, and then I did not play the second one, just because I didn't have the, I don't remember having the console at the time.
I think it was on everything.
When it hit. Was it on everything? Mm-hmm. Okay, then I just missed it. So
I think a lot of people missed it, so you're not alone.
But I remember really enjoying the original, and so it was kind of a, I mean, look, Disney in a lot of ways is timeless, especially when you deal with Mickey Mouse. You know, they'll release stuff at the parks, right, for decades after something has sailed away on most of its kind of box office draw, and they'll still make money, right? So it's always kind of like never say never on these. But I will say, as someone who has watched their daughter watch a YouTube walkthrough / cutscene compilation of Magical Mirror, I have watched that like 4 times all the way through. I've never played the game. I've just watched it, and I'm just looking at this and going, oh, this is great. I get like, it's gorgeous. I can actually play this one, and she can watch something else that is like, I don't have to see that again for the 90th time. Cause every time I watch it, I'm like, oh my God, the controls look awful just from watching it play out. So I'll be happy to kind of upgrade it. You know, it looks fun. I'm always down for Mickey. I mean, I'm in a little bit of a Disney renaissance right now with Speedstorm because I'm really enjoying that too. So I'm in. This is fun. This is the kind of thing I dig.
I think the larger, like you were talking, Mark, that you didn't know there was such a fan base around this game. I definitely think this is like a cult classic in a lot of ways, but I also think that the response to this just kind of shows that, and this is true for myself as well, that like Mickey Mouse is one of the most popular characters on the planet, and he really has like no representation in video games at all anymore, which is, and historically he's had a little bit more of a represent, like you talked about, like there's been what, Castle of Illusion and then the Magical Mirror and then these games, but over the past 10 or 15 years there's really been nothing Mickey related other than, like you mentioned, Speedstorm or like something like that, like these Disney compilation games where it's like a grab bag of a bunch of different Disney stuff at once. So I think this coming back is exciting for a lot of people, myself included, just because it's like, hey, Disney has some representation in the video game space in 2024, even though this is just a remake. And that's something I would like to see a little bit more of. We talked in our last episode about the whole Disney and Fortnite situation with what's going on there. I would like to see Disney double down and do more with its games in, or do more with its IP in the video game space. Like that's just something that I feel like is easy money for them in some ways, if they make a good game or if they work with great developers, and maybe this is a platform for that to happen. Again, similar to what you were saying with Battlefront, Matt, I saw a lot of people saying like, oh, could this pave the way for Epic Mickey 3? And it's like, I don't know, maybe right. Not, but maybe it'll wake Disney up to like do something else, you know, because like they've got so many great IP that they're sitting on, like their original IP, not even counting whatever the heck they've purchased right. Over the past 20 years. That they could make some great games with it. And I feel like a Mickey Mouse platformer is like such a great idea that they could just continue returning to that well. So
it's such a no-brainer.
Yeah.
On that note, this is kind of like the next step, you know, in that journey, because they had said a few years ago that they really wanted to make video games a big part of like their journey, their whole thing. And, you know, we've seen it with Speedstorm and Dreamlight Valley, which has a really passionate fan base. Both those are from Gameloft. And last year we had Illusion Island, which was actually a really cool mm-hmm. 2D platformer.
I totally forgot about that. Illusion Island was really good.
It was a really good game. And it got, you know, it got some Game of the Award, Game of the Year award nominations. I don't think it won anything, but really cool, passionate team that was behind that one. And you know, it's cool to see, you know, some of these licenses getting, you know, a new shot at life.
Yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right, let's do some rapid fire through the rest of this direct, because I know we've got a lot of other things to hit on, but we've got a larger show ahead of us. So, Mark, I'm going to go to you for this one. New Monkey Ball game, Monkey Ball Banana, something or another. I can't remember the exact name of it. If you do,
now you're putting me on the spot. I'm trying to think what the name of it was.
It wasn't Banana Blitz, because that was one of the other ones.
Banana Battle or something.
Banana Mania, something.
What was it? They always do these banana names. And I'm like, oh, come on. Like, I'm getting them all mixed up with this. Banana Rumble.
That's okay.
Super Monkey Ball, okay. Banana Rumble.
What did you think about this? Were you excited for this at all?
I'm a Super Monkey Ball guy. I've liked the series since GameCube. And it's been, you know, it's been a while since we've had a wholly original Super Monkey Ball. The last two games have been remasters / ports. So I'm excited to see them do something different. I thought it was weird that it was a Switch exclusive. Because the last two have not been, so that's interesting. But you know, like they've got like 16 player online mode, which is going to be interesting. So yeah, I'm excited for it. We'll see if it reaches the heights of the original two games on GameCube, which nothing has since.
Yes, I like those first two games on GameCube a lot as well, and nothing has ever lived up to those. I want to mention quickly, Mother 3 is finally releasing on Switch, but not in America, which is probably just the absolute funniest possible thing Nintendo could have done. Like, if you're listening to this and you're not aware of that game's history, long story short, people have been clamoring for that game to come to the West for 20-25 years or something like that, and they never have. And then yesterday they announced it's releasing on Switch, but not for you guys in the West.
So cruel. Such a troll.
It's funny because it's become such a punchline too. Like, even like Nintendo of America's old president was you know, Reggie was joking about this.
Yeah.
And like, we're still here and it's still not, you know. It's gonna happen. Like, they brought the original NES one here, you know, just randomly on Wii U a few years ago. So I feel like we'll get there, but it's one
Nintendo
of those
seems to be in their like remaster remake era right now too. Like, I think of like Super Mario RPG that came out last year. We've got Paper Mario Thousand Year Doors finally coming back. We've got, I don't know, Luigi's Mansion 2 is coming to Switch for some reason this year. Like, they're remastering and porting a lot of games, so maybe they'll finally take another glimpse.
It'd be funny if the remake hit before the original.
I mean, that's probably just the more likely thing that would happen at this point, to be honest.
You know what I mean?
I think the original is just lost unless you have a fan translation, which I know there's very comprehensive ones out there that you can download or emulate or whatever online. I wanted to mention Shin Megami Tensei 5 Vengeance. I have not played SMT5, but I have wanted to. And then when they announce this, and then when they announce it's on PS5, I'm like, oh, okay, there we go. Because like, I want to play these games. I have nothing against it being on Switch, but it's just PS5 is like my preferred place to play a lot of Atlas games, Persona and stuff like that. So to see that this is finally coming to PS5 and there's a new route into it, awesome. I will probably finally play this. This is also like, this is very like nerdy, maybe not, I don't know. This is like quietly becoming like the year of Atlas. We've got Persona 3 Reload. We've now got this coming out in the summer. And then in the fall, we've got the new Metaphor ReFantazio game.
That looks so cool.
Which I am so hyped for. This is like, they're having a great year. They're having a really, really great year on all fronts. And then maybe we'll get a Persona 6 reveal at some point in the coming months. Probably not. I have no hope for that, but you never know. So I had to mention that. I wanted to also mention, this is another follow-up from our previous episode. Xbox finally announced they're bringing 4 games to other platforms. Switch has some representation amongst this. In the Direct, they revealed that Pentiment is coming to Switch. It's actually out today, the day we're recording. So you can go pick that up and play it right now. Grounded, the game from Obsidian, is coming in April. And then Sea of Thieves is coming to PS5. I believe that's also in April. And then Hi-Fi Rush is coming to PS5 in March. So next month. What do you guys think about this? Any grand takeaways? This had all leaked beforehand. So this is really just confirmation of what we sort of already knew How do you guys feel about these like first four games they're bringing over to new platforms?
There was such a freak out about this, and I get it because ever since Sega went third party, I think everybody's just nervous about like their favorite doing the same thing. But if you look at all four games, they're all games that make a lot of sense to go multi-platform. Like Sea of Thieves, like you're gonna increase the number of people playing Sea of Thieves by putting it on PS5. Like that's a total no-brainer.
I'm so hyped for that.
Hi-Fi Rush. I loved Hi-Fi Rush. You know, a lot of people loved Hi-Fi Rush, but it didn't sell very well. And it's just, it makes sense. Like that's a game that will be on Switch 2, I would assume, when that system comes out. If it's not a launch game, it'll be out like within the first year of Switch 2. Because that's a game that got huge award traffic, got a ton of, you know, write-ups from the industry. But just didn't sell very well. And, you know, you can see Microsoft believes in it as a franchise. And it's a big game from a Japanese developer. And Microsoft needs interest in Japan. They don't have a lot of Japanese developers. They don't have a lot of games that appeal to that demographic either. And Hi-Fi Rush totally fits for them in that regard. And I'd love to see that series continue on and get a sequel and become something. So if it going multi-platform means that happens, then, you know, that's a great thing.
Mark, you mentioned Switch 2, and I just want to go ahead and naturally kind of transition to that. Because my kind of end cap for this topic with the Direct is that this was a partner Direct, so Nintendo did not reveal any of its own games. They're still being incredibly quiet. You know, we've got the Princess Peach game coming up. We've got, like I said before, the Luigi's Mansion 2 and Paper Mario. Like, we know a couple things coming up, but Nintendo itself, we have no idea what they're doing this year. Within the past week, reports have come about that the Switch 2 is now delayed from late 2024 to early 2025, which sucks. Obviously, Nintendo never announced the Switch 2, so that's something that people shouldn't have even gotten necessarily all that excited about in the first place, but you can't sort of help yourself, especially in the line of work that we're in. I guess my question for you guys is, like, when do you think we get the next, like, proper Direct, and when do you think the Switch 2 is finally revealed? I think the current rumors are saying, like, a June reveal is what Nintendo is now looking to do, which still seems almost too early in my mind. I don't know. What do you guys think?
It depends on when it is in 2025. Now, what I'm hearing is first quarter. And if it's first quarter, I would think you're going to see the same window as Switch would be which would be March. So, like, you know, basically a year from now. So I think June would make a lot of sense for a reveal. You could tell from the Direct yesterday, we're in a holding pattern right now. Just if you look at everything that's coming out first party wise, they're good games. You know, Another Code Recollection was good, and Mario versus Donkey Kong was good, but these are ports and remasters. It's very clear that you know, the big stuff is being held.
Give us the Zelda ports. We need those. Bridge the gap to Switch 2. Give us the Zelda ports. Where are they at? We need Twilight Princess and Wind Waker on Switch. Just do it already.
Yeah, maybe they're holding that for winter. The thing that I really want to see is what happens in winter if Switch 2 really is in quarter one, 25. Because, you know, right now, the only games that we have left that have been announced first party wise are Princess Peach, which is next month. Luigi's Mansion 2 HD, which you mentioned, and Paper Mario Thousand Year Door.
And technically Metroid Prime 4, I guess.
Listen, I'm repping Metroid right now. I could honestly see this being the year of Metroid Prime 4, because Nintendo really likes to, when they make a promise, they really like to fulfill it. And we saw this with Twilight Princess, where it ran into the Wii and they made sure it came out on GameCube. They knew that they had promised that, so they made sure it came out on both
systems. Same thing with Breath of the Wild and stuff like
that. Same thing with Breath of the Wild. So I think that we could see Metroid Prime 4 conceivably, you know, at the end of the year. Like, that could be the swan song title. Everybody thought Tears of the Kingdom was going to be the big end, and then it was Mario Wonder, and maybe it really is Metroid Prime 4. Maybe it finally happens. It's been over 5 years since that game got relaunched. You know, it could be it.
Nintendo could also probably just not release anything this year, and I imagine Switches would still fly off the shelves at a pretty decent clip, and I think they would be fine. They've built up themselves a nice little buffer here that even if the last year of the Switch kind of drags just a bit, I think they will be more than fine. But I'm very excited and curious to see what they're going to say next and like when all those announcements will finally start coming about. And I need a Paper Mario release date is what I need. I'm really excited to play that game again on Switch.
The fact that we don't know Paper Mario's release date leads me to believe like it'll be like Super Mario RPG. It'll be like October or something. So it kind of fits that Christmas window, but like it's not quite in there.
It could be one of those situations where the game's done too and they just opt to hold it because they know that they need more time to fill until the Switch 2 is out. So like
100%
could have conceivably been like a first half of this year game. Now they're like, okay, we're gonna kind of recalculate and replan our release schedule here. That's it for Nintendo. Let's talk about Elden Ring. And I feel like the talk about Elden Ring will just be me ranting about Elden Ring because I know Matt and Mark, you guys are not necessarily From Software guys or Elden Ring guys. And I should this up front. Like I have not played Elden, but I have played every other FromSoft game, and they are arguably my favorite games ever. So it's very unusual that I have not played Elden Ring yet, but I've been waiting for the DLC. Like, it got to such a point where it was like, I want to play this, and then they announced the DLC, and I was like, okay, well, I'm going to hold off until the DLC comes out, and then I'll just play everything. It'll be like one huge experience for myself, and then they decided to take forever revealing the DLC. They announced it last February. We didn't get our first trailer until yesterday. And they finally confirmed that Shadow of the Erdtree will launch on June 21st, which is actually the same day as Shin Megami Tensei 5 is coming out. So that's all of a sudden a huge day. it looks awesome. Like, I don't know if you guys have any takeaways just from the trailer in general. The bosses look great. The From Software is always like at the top of their game when it comes to world design and monster design, boss design, like all that stuff is again off the chain here in this trailer. I think this looks fantastic. I am personally glad that I have waited. I think I'm going to now try to line up my playthrough with the launch of the DLC. So like maybe start around like March or April playing through this game and then see if I can finish the main game like right when the DLC drops. I have a wedding in the middle of that for myself that I'm in a honeymoon that I'm going to have to try to calculate this all around as well. So that will be interesting on my end, but I am super excited about this. To also put into context just how big this is, they're releasing a dedicated collector's edition for this, which I cannot remember ever happening for a piece of DLC or an expansion. Like that's a first that I'm sure it's happened before. But like, I cannot remember anything like that ever happening in the past. Like, that just really goes to show you how I think big this is going to be too. Like, if this was a 5 or 10 hour piece of content, I don't think they're going to look to charge people $250 for a collector's edition or something like that, you know? So like, I'm really excited for this. I'm thrilled to finally play it. I don't know if you guys are going to ever even give this a shot or if you care whatsoever, or if you have anything you want to say, feel free to.
It looks stunning. Like looks absolutely gorgeous. I just know who I am as a gamer, and I'm like, I just don't think this is for me. And I'm shocked how many people it was for. Like it sold incredibly well.
Over 20 million copies.
And I expected it to be a success. I did not expect it to be that level of like cultural phenomenon. And yeah, it is.
I was talking to our coworker Tanner yesterday when this was debuting, and I think the reveal trailer for this had like 500,000 concurrent people viewing the trailer as it went live, which is just crazy. Like, this really did like, I thought this game would be big too, but I'd never expected it to become just like a game that people were talking about. Like, you know, have you played Call of Duty? Have you played Elden Ring? Like, there's like far more mainstream products that this found a way to break into when the game itself is for very, very hardcore audiences. I feel like you guys have mentioned.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I'm with Mark. Like, I know that these games are not typically my jam. Like, it's just the amount of punishment that, you know, you have to endure to get to that really great stuff. I don't have, like, I've just not computed that way anymore. I probably was at one point in time, but not anymore. So I just know going in. However, what I will say is that this trailer made me want to go play it. And it's like, if it can do that to someone who already knows what they're getting into, then I think it's a, you know, that's the example of a great trailer. It's stunning. The boss battles look amazing. I will die plenty of times, probably giving it a shot, and then be like, I'm good. I'll watch someone else play it who's good at this game. But it did make me want to go get a copy. I mean, it did work. This does look phenomenal.
I'm thrilled to finally start playing it here within the coming months. So I'll report back on that if I have anything interesting to say about a game that's already been out for 2 years. In a second, though, we'll talk about a game that is not even out yet. We're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we will be diving into our thoughts on Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which is out at the end of this month. So be sure to join us for that in just a moment.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
You're back. Matt, you and I have been playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. You have been playing it far more than I have been playing it, though. So let's dive into that. The review embargo broke for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth this morning. Our official review is up on the website. Evan reviewed the game for us. I believe he gave it a 5 out of 5, which seems to be the consensus for a lot of other outlets around the internet. I believe the Metacritic score before I hopped into this was sitting currently at a 93. So this is reviewing very, very well. Reviewing pretty, I think this is even maybe reviewing higher than Final Fantasy VII Remake did.
Yeah,
which is saying a lot, so. because that game was already incredibly acclaimed in its own right. And now it seems that Square Enix has found a way to improve what they did in that game. Matt, what is your, just top down, we'll dive into some more nitty gritty stuff here. And I know Mark has a lot of questions for this too, so I want Mark to ask questions here throughout as we dive into this. But what are your broad thoughts on this? How do you feel like it matches up to Remake? Do you think this is going to be game of the year this year? Like, is it that good?
Well, number one, I'm going to, you know, be upfront, right? Final Fantasy VII is like one of my favorite games of all time. So I already come in a little predisposed to hypercritical, because I adore that game. I played it 3 times. But you know, it's still like, there's still a love for this game. And I will say, I think one of the big reasons that it's actually reviewing better, and probably going to open to bigger acclaim, is that this one is it has more open world elements than the last one did. I'm perfectly fine with a more linear style Final Fantasy game. I adored Final Fantasy 16. There's parts of the Lightning Trilogy that I enjoy, even though that first one really sucks. There's still other parts of that, right? So I'm okay with a linear experience. That said, this one, what, 3 hours in, automatically like just kind of tables that. And yes, you're getting all the story, you're getting all the dive in on the Sephiroth and Cloud stuff, but it's also very much like you could spend 5-6 hours just in that first opening space and be perfectly content. And there's tons of different side quests that open up and all kinds of other mechanics that feed back into the central one. So I just think from that perspective, people will enjoy that even more so than remake just because of that approach. I think that will win over a lot of people that maybe thought, you know, the first remake was a little too linear for them. And so far, I mean, they just keep going with the storytelling, and they keep going with the, you know, the graphical fidelity and the battle system. I think they found such a nice balance in, you know, balancing those active mechanics and being able to control your other people, materia that lets you delegate to other characters and let them operate more autonomously without you having to control each and every one of them. So all that stuff, I just think it's more approachable in that regard. I don't know. What do you think so far?
I'm still at the point where it hasn't really like opened up a ton for me. Like, again, I've been juggling a bunch of other things lately, and I've also just not had, I've not been home as much as I would have liked to have been the past 2 weeks. So I've not had as much time to even play games. I have not played the originals. So the original Final Fantasy. So I played Remake, but I don't have the same sort of love for this series that I know a lot of other people do. So I'm coming in a little bit more blind to like where they're going and what they're doing in this game. I enjoy a lot so far though. I think it's a step up in just about all the ways that I've seen so far. Again, it's just small refinements here and there too, like on the combat and stuff like that. The broad strokes remain similar, but it's just, they're putting it mm-hmm. in kind of in a different, and the game's opened up far more. The question I had for you though, is because like I said, I don't think I've reached the point where it really opens up a lot yet. And I played 16 last year, and 16 kind of does this weird thing where it's like they put you in these open world environments, but they're not really enticing to explore in the slightest. And it's like, that's actually one of the game's biggest drawbacks, I feel, is that like you're in these huge open areas, but there's just nothing to do in them. How do they approach that in Rebirth here as the game starts to really expand its scale? And do you think the open world design is like drastically better compared to 16, or does it still feel like empty in certain places?
It feels more actually kind of like a step back to what the original did in a lot of ways. I compared to 16, it's night and day. It's, you know, that was actually one of my biggest issues with 16, that I like the side quests that are there. There's just like 8 of them. And everything else you're doing in that world is you're walking. It's really pretty
too.
Like, yeah. And they're like all no that, variation. You know. So that was my biggest issue. And here I don't have that problem yet. You know, I'm clocking in about, 18 hours. And so I don't have that issue yet. I mean, there's all the standard stuff like the Chadley kind of working with him on, you know, getting like battle stats and you open towers kind of a la, you know, Assassin's Creed, that again, give you more things to explore in the world. You're riding chocobos and you can discover treasure along the way, and you actually have to use their senses to do that. Little things like that, even when riding a chocobo, like there's still like a couple of mini games associated with that. And that's kind of the recipe for everything else. You know, there's the combat itself is as fun as anything, like you mentioned, but being able to then tie back into all the summons and all that, like you had to do before, right? You have to beat that in Chadley's system, but you have to like discover things first and then unlock that. So like there's like a reason to be exploring, and the cities feel, you know, much more alive than, you know, 16s. Like there's, you know, there's stuff to do. You know, also, I got to say, and I'm blanking on the name now. I had it in my brain. The card game that they did.
Oh, yes. I know it, too. Blood, I'm blanking on it as well.
But it's going to drive me nuts. Okay,
I'll look it up.
I have spent way too much time playing that thing. Like, I need an app. I need a Gwent-style app for that.
That's exactly what I've heard people comparing it to is Gwent. Queen's Blood. That's what it is.
Yes. It's so fun. And you can go around challenging people all over the world. And there's like a guy with a trading card shop, right? Like there's all these things that are fun to do and fun to explore. I, of course, want, as we go on, I want more variety. And also too, you got to remember like the way the story goes, you are headed to a casino. Mm-hmm. Like that. You are going to start. They've already shown the stuff in the games, right? That was such a big part of the original. And so being able to go to Golden Saucer and have all those different mini games and stuff, like there's going to be stuff to do in this world So yeah, night and day compared to 16.
The trading card stuff scares me because I know how I played Witcher 3 and Gwent like derailed me in that game.
Yeah.
Like I got so dragged off the beaten path to just run around and play Gwent with people that like eventually I set the game down. I'm like, I don't think I can finish this. I've played it for like 50 hours though. But like in the grand scope of what I did, it was like a whole lot of nothing because I just kept playing Gwent with people in that game. Mark, I can have you jump in on a question, but I think I know the question you might want to ask. And I'll just say, how do you think, Mark here, I know has been talking on our team about how he hasn't played Remake. Do you think he can dive right into Rebirth?
Matt. So they do a very good job with an opening introduction that catches you up. It's the story so far. It does a good job. It doesn't.
Yeah, I played the original Final Fantasy VII. I just haven't played Remake yet. My right. copy of Remake is still sitting there.
So what's most interesting about the way Remake approaches that is because there is a that opening thing of, hey, here's a story so far, does leave out some kind of key context to me that I feel like you only get if you've played, or at least read a wiki, right? But you only play the original game. Like, you, I there, and it's just the way that they're balancing what actually happened and everything tied to the whispers. So like everything that you know that happened as fact in the original game paired with these kind of other realities that were, and they play on that early on in this, right? Because like, I can say it. I mean, Zach plays a role in this, right? So like there's things tied to in the original game. There's things tied to Aerith's death that obviously are played with. Like, is that going to happen here now that things are free of the whispers and like there's some amount of freedom, your fate is yours. Like there's all those things that it kind of plays with that I feel like the opening little cinematic doesn't quite, it kind of glosses over. So I feel like certain things you might get a little lost in and they keep playing with that. Did this really happen? Aren't you supposed to be like something else happened to you that I'm remembering, but you don't. So there's that kind of question that I think might lead to some confusion. If you haven't played the original, but then again, I also think like people are smart. You know what I mean? Like you can, if there's some piece you're missing, you can go dive in and go, hey, what is this about? And someone will explain it and you can play. I think it would be okay for you to jump in.
You mentioned Aerith's death, so I feel like we could just kind of talk about that. That's like the big question, you know, going into this game. You know, they've hyped for 4 years, you know, that they might not kill Aerith in this game. And like we know this game ends with that scenario, or at least in that location. Right. So I'm just so fascinated. I'm so fascinated by that. And the fact that Zach's around, and anybody that played Crisis Core knows that, like,
Zach, did you play Crisis Core, Mark?
What's up?
Did you play Crisis Core?
I actually just finished Crisis Core the other day. Okay. And it was funny because I started it back in like September, October. And I finally finished it. And I went from like, when I started, I'm like, what's the deal with Zach? Like, he's such a dork. And then like, as the game went on, I was like, oh, he is a dork, but like, I really like this guy. And I'm so invested now in him being this main character in Rebirth, whereas he's in a flashback in the original Final Fantasy VII, and that's it.
Right.
But now I'm so invested in him being around and what the heck is going on with him. And like, does he get a happy ending with Aerith? Like, what are they going to do? Like, I'm all in on this. And that's the biggest, you know, that's the biggest hook for this game.
Well, I think that's what they've done so well. I think that's the beauty of what they've done with this story is that they're walking that line. You don't, the fact that they're making you guess and that you don't honestly know, and they're bringing in all this extra material that, you know, for the longest time, Final Fantasy fans were like, yeah, they ate up and they bought it, but like they were like, you know, pissy about it because they're like, oh, I didn't add anything. And now they're like recontextualizing all of that. And you are guessing going forward. I mean, there's a whole thing early on in this one, because like this one really opens up in like a big flashback scene. That's like the first hour of the game is like flashback stuff, right? But again, it's done really well and it's filling in some things that you obviously know from the first game regarding Sephiroth. But like, it's the way, I've never seen Genova contextualized as well I think they did a good job of actually like streamlining some of that and still making it, you know, disturbing and, you know, creepy and cringy in some
very
spots, but it always was going to be. Yeah, it was always going to be. But like they did it in a way that I feel like someone could walk away from this and go, yeah, okay, I get it. I understand what's going on. I understand some what's happening with that. And the fact that they're able to do all that, plus build out, you know, an open world and make the battle system as great. I mean, they're even tying like your character relationships are important again, right? So like everyone starts out kind of pissed at you as Cloud. Like everyone's kind of, it's not like they're negative, but they're just very like apathetic as far as like their level of care. And so as you play, do synergy abilities in combat, as you do actions with them in the open world and quests, as you do story related things, that relationship starts to build up again. And so it's just, they're layering all that on top of the fact that they're making you guess on a story that is how many years old. It's pretty impressive.
I really like the conclusion of Remake, because I felt like my whole time playing that game was like trying to understand like what that game was and what they were doing. Right. Cause again, it was all, I was blind to all of it. And then when you got to the end of, they're like, nope, we're going to subvert fate. No one knows what's going to happen next. I'm like, cool. I feel like I can be a part of the conversation now moving forward rather than just like, I feel like so much of Remake was just people like, oh, look at that part. That's so cool. Like when, like Kate Sith shows up randomly at the very end of that game. And like so many people are like, oh my gosh, there he is. And I'm like, who the heck is that? Like, what is happening here? Like I just felt so like lost at times with the first game. And so to have Rebirth come along and it is still following the same beats as the original Final Fantasy VII, but they're obviously subverting expectations and doing things that even established fans like yourself, Matt, like you don't know exactly what they're going to be doing long-term. Right. Like that's really exciting. And I think that allows people like myself who've never played the original to just, like I said, be part of that conversation and kind of have not feel like I'm missing out. Cause that's exactly how I felt so much back, what, I think in 2020.
That's what it's about.
First came about. Yeah.
Right. It's about growing that audience, you know? So mm-hmm. Yeah, Mark, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're good. My big question too, is that if they do kill Aerith, are they going to be able to do so in a way that still continues that unexpected train for 4 years? I mean, because realistically, right, it's going to be another 4 years before this trilogy ends, if not more. So that was the big hype surrounding this game. Can they continue that is my question.
I mean, obviously, we have not reached the end.
Right.
Yeah. We haven't reached the end, so we're not saying anything definitive, yes, but I would be shocked. Right. If this game ends in just the exact same way as the original Final Fantasy VII, because that kind of like defeats the whole purpose of like the undoing fate stuff that they did in the first game. And so if at the end of the day, we get to the same resolution where it's just like, oh, yep, she's dead again. It's like, well, what was kind of the point of everything else that happened prior to this, you know?
Exactly. So I also think that feeds into the long game of this, because like what you were mentioning, Logan, was that the unexpected is part of what's fun about this. So it is kind of funny to me when I see people complain about like, okay, well, Vincent's in the game. I haven't actually run in, you know, like I can't say anything about that.
I mean, they've shown him in the trailers and stuff.
That's what I'm going to say. I can't say anything about it. But what I will say is like, we've seen right in trailers and things like that, like Vincent and Sid, we know that they're in the game and you like get to interact with them in some way. Right. But people are like, when they learn that they weren't playable, they were like, well, you don't get to, you know, you don't get to play as them. And how crappy is that? And as Mark was alluding to, this is a long game scenario. There are multiple, like, because there's a whole other chapter that you have to do. Why the hell would it make sense to then have literally all your other playable characters in this chapter? Because then there's nothing new, right? And what I love here is that because Aerith didn't die, for those who played the original and tried to game shark it and max out to 999, because Aerith died so early, you didn't get even to use her like her limit break, right? Like yeah, that was the whole like the thing. There's tons of
she was the most cracked teammate in the whole game and she died.
Exactly. So like you actually get to play as her, develop her skill tree and all those things here, plus then right from, you know, integrated like Yuffie, having her in the mix is great, Kat, and then also, you know, Red was in the first one, but you didn't get to play as him. Now you get to play as, like, there's so
that's
much.
What I, that's what I was going to bring up too, is that Red was like the big omission in the last game. And everybody was like, well, why can't we play as him? And it's like, well, it's clear they're trying to save some stuff here. Like, right. You know, there's three games.
Right. Like, it was three discs, guys. Like, relax, you know, geez. So yeah, there is a little bit of that too, but I think it's tied to the long game, and I will agree with you, Logan. I think that if it ends in the exact same way, I will be bummed. Mostly not because, I mean, I've been prepared that Aerith might die since the original game, right? So that's not going to like super shock me, but it's more about, oh, they kind of hewed a little too close. I want to see them take chances. I want to see them take risks. And I like not being able to guess everything. It's cool. It's a fun thing.
It's funny because I'm seeing people guess, like, oh, does somebody else die? You know, does Cloud die? Does you know, Tifa die? And like, obviously, they're not going to kill Cloud. But hey, that's the expectation that Square Enix has given people. And I think that's awesome.
Death is so like integral to this story, though, too. Like Aerith's death is like the moment of the game. So like, something's going to happen along those lines. I'm not sure what, right. But maybe if we finish the game, we could do a big spoiler cast and talk about this at a later date. But I know that's going to take forever because I've been joking a lot lately and saying, like, why is every game like 60 to 80 hours now? And it really feels like that is just the case. Like, becoming an adult and trying to play games on the side is not.
It's tough.
It's not enjoyable. I feel like I'm always missing out on something, but that's going to do it for our discussion here. I think we will obviously be hearing a whole lot more about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth over the course of this year. Cause as we said, kind of at the top, this feels like the big game that is coming out this year. I have a feeling this will be in all the game of the year discussions, I'm sure it'll sell like crazy too when it comes out next week. I think it comes out on Leap Day. I want to say February 29th.
My wife's birthday.
Your wife is a leap day baby.
It's her 10th birthday.
No, she's reached 10. Nice. I know. Who else is that? Who else did I see recently? I think Tyrese Halliburton on the Pacers is that. He's technically only 5. So that's fun. Anyway, we will be back next time with another episode of Quick Save as part of Comic Book Nation here. Again, if you are not subscribed to our Comic Book Nation channels, be sure to do so. I know Matt and Kofi have been doing a lot of breakdowns for season 2 of Halo recently. We've got a ton of other shows here as part of Comic Book Nation as well. We've got The Pull List, which is all about comics. We've got our main show, which is a grab bag of everything pop culture related. So be sure to check out all of those other shows here as part of Comic Book Nation. And yeah, that's going to do it for this episode. We will see you back here next time with another edition of Quick Save, talking about whatever happens in the gaming industry next. So until that time, take care, everybody.